This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey guys, got a big announcement that we want to add in. Later in the podcast, I'm going to talk about NRB and us doing a live audience recording there of the podcast. It's going to be in Dallas. Earlier, you had to be a part of the conference or you couldn't come, but I think because of pressure from you guys, they've decided to open it up. And so you can get $25, you can get a one-day pass, and you can get there as early as 11 o'clock at the event, but our podcast is at 4 p.m., and so you want to go online. If you want to go, if you're especially in the Dallas area, go online. You'll see there, we'll tell you where to go, NRB, register, and then make sure and get your ticket. And then if you want to see us live, you'll get the opportunity to see us live. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we encourage you guys that want to come to check it out, and better get on it pretty quick because I don't know how many spaces are available. So if you really want to come, I would check it out.
I am unashamed. What about you?
So we're welcoming our East Coast cousin, the business mind of our little operation, one Zach Dasher, back into the lair. It's been a little while since you've been down here.
It has been.
Yeah. You've been doing all your running around and hobnobbing at the Sonic. And
how far is Eustace, the mountain man from you? He's in the same mountain range you're in.
What's his name?
Eustace.
Is he famous?
E-U-S-T-A-N-C.
He's a famous mountain man?
Well, he's a mountain man, lives off the land in North Carolina, and he's in that mountain range.
How do you know about
how
this
do you
guy?
Know him?
It's right after Matt Dillon, that comes on. Mountain men.
Okay. He's expanding his TV.
He cuts logs and lives.
Wait, that's the, you're talking about the reality show?
Yeah.
Lives, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Look at Springs, that watching reality
Warm
show.
Warm Springs filmed it. The same ones
that
filmed us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We work with them on, working with them on another project.
I just wanted to know if you had heard of him or something.
I think we can talk about
that. Can we talk about that?
I don't know.
I have lived. Well, somebody said.
So you're here. Well, usually when we think of something, we have to stop recording and say, can we talk about that? I don't know. Where's Zach? Somebody text
me. We're going to film a show because this is audience driven. This is Unashamed Nation.
It came because of Unashamed Nation.
They
started here.
They rose up.
They did.
And they said, let's make a show about unearthing things that have been lost. So me and Jep and my good friend Mr. Murray, we're fixed to do this.
It's gonna happen. We're in, I guess you'd call it pre-production now.
Yeah, we've assembled the team.
We've got the team.
We got the band back together. Yep. And I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah.
It's gonna be
so
good.
So Zach's our mastermind, but that's what Zach's role is to, do stuff like that because he's smarter than all the rest.
Secrets of the earth. Things that have been buried.
Oh, that's pretty good, Phil. Secrets, what about of secrets of the earth?
Ooh. There you go.
That's it.
I'm just saying.
Phil, I think you might have done it right here
secrets
today.
Of the earth.
I want to write
secrets
that down.
The earth.
Write it down.
Simply put,
right now.
I'm here to help.
Yeah.
But everybody is interested.
You know why? Because he watches a lot of reality TV that I didn't know about.
No, I watched Matt Dillon.
We're fully aware of that one.
And a few of these guys running around out there.
I like the mountain man.
Yeah, living up out in the Montana, Rocky Mountains and all that. Pretty interesting.
Well, we need to get mountain man to make a guest appearance.
Would our mountain man be able to be on mountain men?
No, these are real. They're real mountain men. Mountain men, the show, is real. I mean, it's like legit.
Yeah, they're guys who just...
They
use, by the way, the same kind of traps that I just got through running yesterday evening.
Yeah.
I ran mine.
I think you could be a mountain man if you just moved to the mountains.
Kind of I'm a flatlander, but I use the same traps they use to catch varmints.
When I spoke yesterday, I put a picture up of you, and I put a picture up of Judge Jephthah Robertson. Did you know there's a picture of him?
I didn't know we had
a picture.
That's my great-grandpa.
Great-grandpa. Oh, and then I had a caption above it. I said, born 100 years too late. And so I talked about you being born in 1946, but you easily could have survived 1846, no problem. And there was your great grandpa who was born around that.
Was that the picture on your counter at the house?
No, that's his son, Ewan. I think Ewan was Paul. Is that isn't that right?
Yeah, Mr. Ewan was my he's great grandfather. He was
my dad. He was even one further.
He was my dad's dad.
Right. But it was interesting because Judge Jephthah looked so much like you. His beard was not as big, but he had a beard, same nose. I mean, it was very evident.
That was his name, Judge Jephthah?
Judge Jephthah.
Is
that's who Jeph's named after.
Really?
Yeah, he got shot on a levee is what Granny told me.
Yeah, the feds killed him, which makes sense.
Wait, what happened?
How does that make sense?
It makes sense because the flood comes and it gets up on the levee. The only high ground around there is the levee.
Which we talked about
high ground.
My
great-grandpa, the water ran the cows, his cows, up on the levee. Yeah. They came down and said, get them off the levee.
Because it was federal land.
You might hurt their levee.
Did you read this in a book?
Somewhere? No, Granny tells us. Oh. Granny tells us.
And Ma said there was a shootout and the feds won. So it was all over cows, like you know.
And for what? A bunch of cows.
More cows.
That's our family history. It does make more sense now.
I felt better about him dying for that. I thought, well, if he was going to go out firing.
You understand at a deep level the need to get things to higher ground. We covered that on the last podcast.
I mean,
right?
And he's there.
He gave his life for that.
Yeah, and I saw the Great Flood of 1958. And I was born in 1946, but there was one in, 1929, I think it was.
Yep, 1929.
They were during that one, right along in there somewhere. It's when, because, I mean, these rivers, they, from where we are right here, back up behind us, it would have been halfway up that hill to Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Wow, the whole plain.
The whole thing. You'd go by boat from right here to Vicksburg.
Yeah.
After hearing the secrets of our life, I'm really proud of the grace of God and the power of God that we're still here after hearing that.
That's exactly right.
We've come a long way.
Gee whiz.
Survive shootouts.
He just said, hey, I'm just.
I mean, you're finding stuff that came off of Union soldiers. Well, some of that stuff you're finding, you say, oh, this. The Union had these.
Yeah, I've just found the Northern troops. They call a breastplate that they would use as a target.
I don't know whether they came through after the war to make sure, trying to calm things down, and they called in the Union forces. I don't know that. I could ask old Sandy about it. He's the professor where we meet at the university. He's a historian, and he leans Southern, deep Southern. You know, the Civil War and all. He's on the South side.
He's your Google for all things Civil War.
It's amazing what you find in the ground. And, I was telling Murray, he was like, I just don't know, what I can bring to this show. I was like, Murray, when you reach your age, you got to remember, most of what you have left is history.
That's right.
Because you're all in on the resurrection. I was like, but we need a history expert. And that's who you are.
Yeah. Yep.
Just be yourself. That's the key.
So
to that.
I think we actually
Murray Crow has many, many skill sets.
He really does.
He's a Renaissance man.
Yeah. And he has a lot of new vehicles. He every time I see him, he's pulling up in a new vehicle.
I mean, he almost makes vehicles. I mean,
he makes guns. I
was
going
to say he's a big gun guy. I know that.
Oh yeah.
He can make guns.
He can fix anything on an automobile. Anything.
I think we ought to pitch the idea that we involve Unashamed Nation in the show.
I totally agree.
I think we should just say, look, we should have a hotline that says, call us. Kind of like Ghostbusters, but now we're Secret Busters. I like this name. We have a get together after this podcast, and I'm going to submit that as the title. And this idea about involving Unashamed Nation. So we have a hotline. We'll get like Cy to answer the phone.
I don't want to scare you, Jace. I don't want to scare you. But last night.
Oh, no.
Last night.
You had a dream?
I had a dream.
Here we go. I had no idea.
The dream was you showed up. We found the old fence down there where Wendell said there was an old house place. I remember it.
Yeah.
I know about where it is. we went back down there to that place, got in there, and as it turns out, Jace with his metal detector found gold.
Are you kidding me?
And a lot of it. I mean the big bricks, the bricks like this.
Will you be a guest? Because now we have to do it.
I'm not lying. I had a dream about it last night.
Will you make a guest appearance on this show? All you have to do is just stand there and point.
I'll just walk by.
Okay, we'll do that. I'm gonna make that happen, can we?
Yeah, that is an episode. He had a dream. We go to wherever he dreamed about it.
Well, because I had.
Yeah, wait a minute. Let me be the voice of reason here. He also has dreams about monkeys that attack him. He has dreams about people that he has to fight. So I don't know that we can like rely.
But Al,
I don't know that this is reliable. Look,
metal detecting is about the hunt. The reason I'm involved in it, yep. It's about the hunt. I mean, sometimes I go hunting and guess what? I watch the sunrise and set.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. The plan. So you're okay if
it's a strikeout.
You got to swing. You got to swing to be in the game.
Most of them will be a strikeout, right? I mean, you may find the little stuff, but
sadly, yes. However, but when you do have a day like we had the other day, I found a gold button, not a military thing, but just a gold button from the 1820s. Just, burp, burp, burp. That was a feel. Right, he gets sound effects. I dig it up. And look, as soon as I uncovered it, I was like, "That's a gold button." I mean, you could just see it. It's been in the ground 200 years and shine like new money. So now we'll have to
pursue
this.
I found a rock right there between an Indian mound, an old Indian mound. I know they camped out there because the mussel shells are up on the riverbank. Well, you go due north for about 80 to 100 yards. I sawed a tree off the road. I told you about this, and I found a rock knife. They'd used it as a knife, the Indians. I mean, it's just like a hatchet head, but instead of metal, it was a rock. Yeah. And I could see where I think a woman had held it for a long time, years, 100 years, 200, 300. But I could tell. That's what they got that meat off a hide.
Yeah.
Like a coon or a beaver or a deer. I got it on my, right above my fireplace over in the middle of the road. It looks just like a metal axe, but it's made out of stone. But I can tell it had been used by someone a long time.
For those of you listening, Dad is doing a motion of the rock cutting away a pelt.
Probably in the 1500s, that rock there that showed up, 1500s, and those mussel shells. But Jace is talking about probably where that old home place is, and there's a couple of more on my neighbor's land there. There's about 3 home places.
Well, I will find them and check them out.
Well, one of the reasons why is we're on the...
That was probably 1700s, early 1800s, maybe mid-1800s.
You think?
It's been a while.
So we're on the bluff of a river, which is why you get a lot of that. Because that's how they got around.
You could not tell that there had been anything except there's some kind of concrete, like a chute going down to the river, coming up on the bank. It looked like they would get cattle down it and get them on a boat and go on to the Mississippi River. Oh,
yeah. Probably whatever. Getting them off the levee,
which may be better.
There's a bottle that looks like this, and it's in the earth, except this is like 20 foot. This is a 20-foot circle. It's buried. It comes up like this.
I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
This is inside the ground. Over there,
where you had the dream where the gold is?
About a mile from there, there's another home place.
Phil's talking about, we're going to be on an excursion.
Well, it's just like this, but this, and you see plastic, it's narrow.
He's holding a water bottle.
This was like this, buried in the ground, made out of stone. And it comes up like a bottle, like this. And this part is still sticking out. There's about 2 foot of it sticking out. About this tall.
Well, I'm going to.
Well,
go
you
find,
look down yeah. in there, and it's dark. It's like a big jar, but you could take a ladder, put it in there. When I took my flashlight, because it was dark, I shined down in there, It had a dirt floor, mm-hmm. but I don't know whether it was silt, might have been, you know, but it was made out of like almost like, not like concrete, like what do you call it?
Clay, stuff? Like pottery clay?
Yeah, pottery. It's just like a pottery. Well, I shined the light down there and there were a lot of bones.
Oh my God.
And I was saying,
this has turned into a mini series.
This is a whole season.
But from what I could tell, they were all animal bones. But it occurred to me, if I had stepped over in there,
your bones would be there.
There's no way to get out of there unless you had a ladder reaching and it's up. I mean, you would have.
When did you discover this?
Oh, back when we first moved here, I roamed.
We're talking about 40 years ago.
I covered every square inch of all this.
How far is it from right
hang
here?
Hang on, Jason.
From right here, I can have you standing beside it in 15 to 20 minutes.
Let's take a break. So the question comes up quite a bit on our podcast because of one of our sponsors. Is can thieves really steal your home's title? Because we talk a lot about home title lock
yes.
on here.
Here's why. Because every house is built by someone. Hebrews 3:4. But that just means if you build it, they will steal it.
That's a good point. So we have an actual thief that's been caught who has stolen over 150 homes and was sentenced to 25 years in prison, which is why you need home title lock. So hear what he has to say.
Nobody thinks that I can take their house and borrow against the house. Oh, no, I have title insurance for that. No, it's in my name, or he would have to get some special document. They would call me. You know, nobody's calling you. After I've stolen the title, borrowed against it, or sold the property, or done whatever I've done with it, it's 60 to 90 days to even figure out that they're the victim of this crime. You know, by that point, you start getting foreclosure notices, and you realize you've got four mortgages on your house. Not only that, you don't even own your home anymore. It's not even in your name.
So now that we've heard that, go to HomeTitleLock.com. You register your address to make sure that you're not already a victim. You enter radio and you get 30 days of free protection. So that's HomeTitleLock.com. Register your address. Get 30 days of free protection. Radio at HomeTitleLock.com. So Dad should be the show producer.
Yeah.
Phil, I realized that we went to the wrong people.
I've been dealing with these people for a year about ideas, and in 10 minutes, all your ideas are better. We have a dream. There's gold. We have some weird.
Let me put it to you this way, Jace. Pottery. If I ever disappear and you don't know what happened to me.
You're in that hole.
You find that hole over there. You look down in there. I will have some kind of ladder going down in there, and I'm hiding, but it is a good place to hide. I got to find that old jug over there.
If the feds ever get after his cows, he's going to the hole.
He's still running down the ladder.
No, now I've already given the secret away, and they know now they're somewhere over there.
Now they're going to find
they'll
you.
They'll get in a long line with dogs, and they'll track me to it.
So you think a skirmish broke out. They had built this jar to hide in? Possibly?
You could comfortably sleep 15 people inside it. So I'm carrying Miss Kay with me, if she's still around, and y'all and your grandchildren, but that's about it.
Well, my wife ain't going in that hole.
I'm going to tell you what, Al ain't either.
Zach's
I'm going to take my chance.
We'll work him in.
I'm taking my chance with the fence. I mean, I'm a little bit closer.
Bring me a pillow to put on all the dead bones.
The problem is something falls over in there, a coyote, I could see the bones and the hair and the coons. When they fall off in that thing, the walls are like this, Jay, slick as they can be. It's just like a big jug.
Why have we not gone and discovered this?
I already have.
Well, I know, but
that's what I'm trying to tell you.
He's now revealed his secret hiding place.
This is big news.
Oh, it's big news. It really this is going to make some episode.
I've been around Phil my whole life.
I never heard that story.
Never heard this story.
I've kept it under wraps. Yeah.
Now's the time. Dad says this show is going to be the revelation.
So we need to just go look for this and whatever happens.
But let's
happens.
Not, we can't go out there until we got to have a crew, a camera crew.
Well, obviously.
And I would bet you.
And an ER.
What was it? Look, here's what I know. I know that humans made it, that thing.
Yeah.
And I know that they put it in the ground there. I don't know whether they dug a gigantic hole and got down in there and built this thing and then covered it back up.
Could have been aliens.
I mean, because it's it's just there. So somebody put it there.
And we have no idea what the reason is.
What do we think the purpose was for? Because it had to have had a purpose.
It possibly was a cistern.
That's what I was
whereby
thinking.
You caught the water off your house and you had a little funnel going to it.
Yeah.
And you and every time it rained, you'd pull what you'd maybe it was for water.
Yeah, for like a well.
Because a lot of people don't realize when we were raised, your dad here, the only water we had was water coming off the house. And there was a tank sitting up on a structure, and that a funnel coming from the house.
Most third world countries are still like that.
Yeah, and it ran down the what do you call them? On the side of your roof.
The gutters.
The gutter, run down the gutter, and then it run over in that tank, and we drank water.
Rainwater.
Water tap. We drank water from the rainwater. Rainwater.
Yeah.
That's all we had.
It's the ultimate attack.
So, it was fine until you crawl up there. We were kids, and we looked down in there, and it looked pretty rough down in there. I mean, it was like, not scummy, but... There was.
What's interesting about all this is because we're finding just.
I was surprised that I was when I saw it. I told Si, I said, "I'm just glad to be alive after drinking this." I said, "I didn't know it looked like that." He said, "Me either." But
so now we know what happened to Si. Well, this has been.
It was either that or running along behind the
DDT right there next to us on cotton. It gums up. DDT falls on everybody inside the rainwater. I'm like, hey, we're drinking DDT. I mean, I
said they come along and spray it out of the back of a truck, and the kids all run along.
Oh, yeah. Running behind it, playing in it.
Yeah.
Well, look, it's raining.
20 years goes by, and they said, this is the most deadly poison you could ever have.
It's raining poison. Let's run behind it.
It explains a lot.
Yeah.
We were talking about during the one of the commercials about what your favorite piece of furniture is. And when you think about all we're doing when we metal detect, we're just finding old things that people lost or wherever people congregated. So the other night I was having dinner with Missy and Karina, my Nicaraguan daughter. And for some reason we came up kind of like what we were doing with that commercial about what's your favorite furniture. Well, somehow or another, it's like, we came up with the idea, if you were on a deserted island and you could only bring five things, what would you bring? And just off the top of my head, my mind was racing. Well, they started naming the things that they would take. And Missy, like, her first thing was a blanket. That it wasn't just a blanket. And I'm like, that's the first thing? And then she's like, well, beans and rice. I was like, what?
Well, we got to eat.
And she said, of course, you. I was like, wait a minute, don't get me hooked up into this. She's like, well, that's just understood. So then we had like a 10
But you were number three behind beans and rice?
Well, I think it just occurred to her, oh, I better say Jace. Mm. But I thought, well, I thought this was every man and woman for themselves type of deal. But then Karina was like, well, a journal and like a box of pens. And I was like, what is wrong with you people? And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, I'm bringing a gun.
Yeah, I thought about it.
A knife. The largest spool of monofilament line in the world. And they were like, why would you bring that? I was like, you're not going to live long with a blanket and a journal. Let's just document our short stay here.
You're going to live about a week or two at best with that.
But the more we got to talking about it, it's really about your role, you know, in a family. It's like, I'm going to protect us.
Yeah.
And Missy was going to make us comfortable.
And Karina's going to document. She's going to document the whole situation.
She's going to document it because she's just taking for granted that we're going to take care of the rent. Because she's like, oh, I'm coming with y'all. I mean, y'all are two of the people I'm bringing.
That's right.
So I thought it was interesting when you think about the stuff we find and the stuff people lose. The valuable stuff is things that are that people didn't want to lose.
Yeah.
You know? So it was an interesting conversation.
So what would you bring to a deserted island?
Well, you could make you a fire with anything. So
I brought that up too, though. I said, what? Because you first you say matches, but what if they get wet? Or how long are you going to be there? Or,
Jace is right. A gun and a knife and some rope, string. That you, but so you could survive. Yeah. Rope, string, you know.
Maybe and something to start a fire, maybe with the rock.
And I use wire to tie those steel traps on, catching these coons and stuff. I always got a roll of wire with me. And I'm wiring it to this and that and other in case, you know, they go to jumping around that fur when you catch them. But it would be stuff like that, right. Something you could use to catch something or trap something.
Well, Missy said enough penicillin.
I was like, no.
Yeah, you need an antibiotic. If you had five things, that would be one of them.
Medicine wouldn't be bad. So was it just y'all three doing this little game?
Oh, we did it, but it went from... We laughed, we cried, we argued. It just like became this consuming, like, let's sit down and continue the conversation after the meal because it, I don't know, it just made
me. The gun and the knife would be, and plenty of ammo. If you had that, you could pretty well survive.
And that's pretty much, I mean, most of us carry that with us, you know, even not on a deserted
island. I think I brought it up because it made me think about how, you know, worldly we are about things we think we need.
Jace, all these foreigners from Europe coming across the ocean, landing on one of these river systems, New Orleans be a good place, start going up, and they get up in here, Alabama Landing, they call that from people who came up here way back. And they would say, we're going from where y'all going? Going west. And they'd land up here on the Washita River. They'd have them a wagon. Somebody was handed supplies. But they would just take off across that thing headed west, you know, angling up. Some of them ended up in Kansas, Nebraska on up. You know, some of them got all the way over on the West Coast. But you just think about all they had was what they had. So
that's right.
This is not like a far-fetched picture where you'd never find yourself there. I mean, most of the new ground has already been run over, but you just think about the kind of people went across there and what little they had, and they made it. Yeah. But you're talking about a tough bunch.
But a lot of them didn't make it, too.
A lot of them didn't make it.
Yeah, that's what happened. We divided the categories. You want to take a break?
Yes.
There was no concrete, no power lines, no vehicles. I mean, no mechanized anything. I mean, just wagon with wheels on it. They're like, boy, we got us something here. Proud of them.
No,
at least it would roll. Yeah.
We got into five things you need and then five things you want. But the things that we wanted is where all the arguments came. Because Missy's like, okay, let's be realistic. Our basic needs, which revolved around food, clothing, and the way to make a fire, you know. I mean, a shelter.
Food, water, shelter.
Yeah.
Jace, to this day, you can fly over, because the Smithsonian Channel did, and they pointed their cameras down. You can still see some of the ruts are that deep going out across the Midwest out there, going up toward the Dakotas. You can still, the Oregon Trail, that old Oregon Trail, you can look at it right now. The scars are still in the ground where all those wagons came through there.
Heading west.
And leaving ruts waist deep. I mean, can you imagine getting stuck? Oh, you know, man. All you have is mules or horses. But the old road bed on the Oregon Trail, you can still get on it. And the earth is still sliced up. So many came around.
Well, that's where we need to go metal detect. They left a trail.
They left a trail.
They probably, I guarantee you, they probably won't let you hunt there. You know, a lot of these places.
Oh, it's a lot of it is federal land.
It's a national forest.
I brought that up in my sermon. It's because in Romans 5, where it says we've been given access to God, the creator of the universe. When you think about the places you don't have access to here. Remember that time I did that about the Snake Island and
nothing was mechanized, but all they had probably to keep them going, in my opinion, was the fear of God as they moved across there. Some of them stopped in Great Salt Lake City, you know, the Mormons and all of that, the Joseph Smith story and all of them, you know, they all had happened during the pioneer days. They would just come up on a ridge and look down and say, y'all gather up here. I said, I'll tell you what. Whoever's ever in charge, let's call it a wrap and camp out right here. We got plenty of water. And they were probably just looking like, wow. I mean, there's the claim. Just say, let's just stay here. I have a longing to see that again.
I said it was born 100 years too late.
I would like to see another planet or planets that God would say to us at the resurrection. You remember when all your people come across there and settled the country where you were a member of it? Said, look, I've got several planets you might want to look at. That's some of them are slightly bigger than the Earth, but it has the same forces that you saw at Earth. So I'll show it
that
to you.
That would be heaven to you as the exploration.
Put me on the ground.
Phil, I don't think that's going to be a problem. If you can get us out
on
of the
ground and say, you can go as far as you want to go. There's some bigger ones than this, and bigger lakes and more game and all that. But you stay here as long as you want to. You are immortal, see?
All right. So, if you got an imperishable body, that's a game changer.
I think in my heart, that's what heaven is like.
You've always said that.
Whatever fires you up, you've heard me say that all my life. Whatever fires you up, it's just that, and it never ends.
Yeah, possible.
It's a comforting
I believe
thought.
It's beyond our comprehension.
It is.
So the Bible attempts to, like the book of Revelation, give you a picture of, but it uses the only things we know, which are gold and silver.
A place without ducks is downright scary.
you know, remember when Smith, right before...
Who would want a place without ducks?
Right before Smith went on to be with the Lord, he went through a deep dive into Revelation, and he had come up with this, it looked like to me, in a giant apartment complex that looked like a Borg ship from Star Trek. And he had it landing on top of the Earth, and water was flowing out of it, and we were going to live in the apartment complex.
And you're like, walking on silver and gold.
I was like,
it was a cube.
It was a cube.
It was a
Borg cube.
He had the measurements of it out of Revelation.
I read all this stuff, and of course, you know, Smith was getting, but he was getting ready to go home, and I was like, I don't know that. I want to live there. This doesn't look fun to me. I'm just saying, that was a little too literal.
I was just thinking the same thing. I was like, I'm a little claustrophobic.
It'd be like living in that hole in the ground. I just don't, you know.
I just remember, was it 144,000 miles like in diameter wide, and it was a cube that floats.
Yeah. It was like a rocket.
It's a little too literal for me.
So when I read a book about the Lewis and Clark expedition, which was fascinating to me, you know, because basically after Jefferson brokered the deal, then he just sent that crew out.
Yep.
But when I read that, the account of that, you know, what they all had to do, I thought Dad would have loved to have been on this expedition. I was like, this expedition was made for Phil Roberts. It was just 100 years too late.
They got lost on the Great Plains.
Yeah.
Because they said it was like an ocean, but it was grass. And as far, and they would make circle, try to, so they finally had to start putting up stakes and getting the sun
to know which way they're going.
Yeah. He said, we got lost in a sea of grass is what they said.
They would go through stretches where they had to pick up all their boats and haul them across vast amounts of miles to find another waterway. I mean, they had scouts out ahead. Then there were times when they'd run out of food and they were killing buffalo, and they were just kind of, then they got gout because they ate all the meat. It was just a really interesting following the journey. And really, they only lost one guy, which was pretty incredible along the way.
Well, that was going to be my point why I brought up the what you do on the desert island, is that everybody quickly went to, well, we need to go together. And I think when you think about Ephesians 3:20, where it says God can do immeasurably more than all we can ask or imagine. I mean, when you kind of analyze that, he can do immeasurably. You can't measure how much more he can do than you can imagine. That's like something to the 100th power times something to the 1,000th power. Mm-hmm. That's why I say if you're together, and it comes back down to relationships, which is why we focus on that so much, because we get that from God. That, there's a reason he said, love me with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself, because wherever we're at is really insignificant, or what's it going to be like as long as you're together.
That's right, and need that community. Let's take another break. So, Zach, I want you to tell, since you're here, Your and Jill's life has changed dramatically in the last few months. Tell our audience what you've been up to and the story that the new addition to our family.
Oh yeah, we got a new baby. She is about 8 weeks old now. She's more than that.
I didn't even know Jill was pregnant. She never showed.
She never showed. Yeah. She did. That we adopted this baby. I get confused on the weeks because they do like the way they calculate it in the NICU is based on how many weeks they are, like if you were pregnant.
Right? Yeah. Right.
So the baby was born, Ruth was born at 27 weeks, 2 pounds, 7 ounces.
And they're supposed to go 39?
Yeah, 40. Yeah. It's like, 40. I think 37, maybe full term, but 37 right. to 40
2
weeks.
2 pounds and 7 ounces.
Oh, she was, skin and bones.
Yeah.
Her skin was almost translucent because it hadn't been fully developed yet. I mean, it was a little shocking to see her.
She looked like a skint squirrel, didn't she?
She did.
Yeah.
She did just,
well, I
yeah.
had that same experience,
I had the same
with,
experience
his daughter.
With my daughter.
What was that when she was
She was actually 1 pound, 15 ounces.
Oh, wow.
And she came at week 29. But she had some issues because she had a heart problem. And so it took us a while. She got all the way down to 1 pound, 12 after a month in the NICU. Wow. And then she had heart surgery, and then she took off after that. Now she's having,
every time I hear that, which
it is amazing to watch that woman these days. She
grew up to be a phenomenal person.
She sure did.
Inside and out. But I always think, because how my mind works, is like when I think about a 2 pound bass, you know?
That's what I'm saying.
You're like, a 2 pound bass is like a little old, just
nothing. A living human.
Nubby bass. You know, you just chunk back in the water and it take off. I mean, it just a human, smaller than that.
That's what Lisa's dad said the first time he saw her. He said, I caught a bass bigger than her yesterday. You know, there's like a 3 pound bass. So, yeah, that's what you
So she's grown. What does she weigh now?
She goes to the doctor tomorrow. I'm guessing she's probably about 7.5 pounds now. She's out of the hospital. When she was born, the mother, the biological mother had maybe some kind of ruptured uterus or something. But she was like calling us like, hey, I'm having cramps. And we're like, me and Jill on the phone with this on Easter. And so we're like, I'm timing it. Every time she says that, I said, you're having contractions. And Jill's like, you need to go to the doctor now because they can stop labor maybe. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh my gosh, I'm bleeding everywhere. And so
it had to be terrible for y'all because you're thinking she's losing the baby, right?
I mean, well, yeah, we worried about her too. And so,
and her.
And we're 2 hours away from, and the whole way we met this girl is crazy. That's a longer story, but I mean, God was like totally in this because she didn't know if she's going to keep the baby. So she was contemplating terminating the pregnancy and somehow got introduced to us through a mutual friend. And we ended up on a phone call with her. And she's like, I think the girl told her that we would adopt the baby, but I never even told us that. But it was funny because we were all in already. We'd already been praying about this. And I said, if God puts a baby on our doorstep, then I'm in, thinking that that's never going to happen, right? So that's like Gideon's fleece, you know? If he lands one on our lap, and then it did, that happened. So we were just like, we're in. And she was like, would you really adopt my child? We're like, well, yeah. And she said, well, I'm going to keep this baby, and I'm going to bring her, to birth. And, so we're all crying. She's crying. And so we walked with the mother. We still talk to her. We walked with her. She's got some stuff going on. That's, some difficulties and things, but, we're praying for her too, but it's just cool to see. So she goes to the hospital. And we get there, and when I get there, the father, because we know the father, biological father too, and so he calls, and he's like, they're both dead. Like, he tells us this on the phone, and he says, let me talk to, he's Jill, Miss Jill, can I talk to Zach? And so I'm on the phone with, hey, I might as well tell you man to man. He's crying. He's like, it's gone horrible. They're both dead, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. And we're like 20 minutes from the hospital. So I pull up to the hospital, and I see him out on the curb smoking a cigarette, and they won't let him in the hospital because of COVID and whatever else. And so, like, I park the car, I go there. He's just like chain smoking, crying. I mean, he's a wreck. And I said, let me go inside and figure out what's going on. So then I go and was able to talk to the charge nurse, and she's like, well, I don't know what's going on either. So then, 15 minutes later, they come out, and they're like, Mom's fine. And the baby is, we just got the baby stabilized, revived her and got her stabilized. And so y'all can come in. They let us in. And so we went up there, got to see the mother and biological mother. I got to figure out my terms here. It's like first rodeo for us. But and then we saw the baby, and she's got tubes going in everywhere. They transported her to a children's hospital in Winston-Salem. And
at first sight, though, it was overwhelming, didn't it?
Yeah, I was a little like, whoa. I was the same way. Like, yeah. It's like,
I was a lot younger than you, too, but still, it's overwhelming.
It's like, how can this baby
right.
make it?
That's what I thought.
But it was, when they get in ICU, though, I mean, what they were able to do now is incredible.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I was just like, they got babies being born at 22 weeks, and they're surviving. At 27 weeks, it's like a pretty high survival rate. Now, it's... You know, it's a tough road, and it's difficult. And
let me just interject in the whole pro-life argument. This is another, what you're describing is another reason why, you know, that it's not a blob of tissue.
No, it's not.
It's a child.
You see that in the, I mean, if you go to a NICU, I mean, you see it.
Yeah.
I mean, you see, and even more than just that, even just the way they look. One of the benefits of skin to skin contact, like, you know, what Jill's like, oh, we got to do skin to skin. And I'm like, what is skin to skin? Well, they got to the baby, you know, they got to be next to your skin. Right. And just that whole, even that alone, that the medical benefits, and the nurse is like, yeah, it's been proven science that when you hold a baby skin to skin, you're transferring your good antimicrobial stuff, all your good bacteria to them. I mean,
yeah.
They thrive. Babies that are touched thrive. So it was, you know, we were there every day. We had to drive 2 hours there, 2 hours back, and it was a grind.
That was for weeks. I mean, that impressed me about you and Jill both was your, not just your commitment to your child, but the idea is that whatever it took, we're going to get this done.
Yeah.
And be there for her, which is, you know, really what parenting is all about. Let's take another break.
Yeah, so we would drive 2 hours there, 2 hours back, and but she was out in like seven or eight weeks, and she did real well. So now she's a little fat. She's fat, man. She's got big old.
She's a fat 7 pounder. She's a
fat 7 pounder.
So Jill brought her down here last weekend and stayed at our place, and the baby never was anywhere but in someone's arms.
Oh, yeah.
The entire time they were here, it was really funny. And so my little grandson, Doc, who's only 5, just fell in love with her. I don't know. It was like this, like those Twilight movies. He imprinted with her, you know? And so he's just like, so he wanted to hold her all the time. And he's asking me now, when are we going to North Carolina? He can't wait to see her again. So they call her Ruth, called her baby Ruth is what is kind of a, what we've been calling her, which is already kind of her nickname, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I mean, I think the neatest part about it though, is that we're, you know, it'd be a lot cleaner maybe if it was like a closed adoption, and I understand it'd be cleaner, but I one of the things I love about it is that we do have a relationship with her biological mother and father that I really think one day are going to turn their life around.
Yeah.
And I hope they do. I'd love for when she's grown to be able to go meet her biological parents who have turned it around, are living for Jesus, has cleaned their life. I mean, to me, that's like the kingdom. It's messy,
yeah.
But there's something beautiful in that messiness. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So it's been an incredible journey. Well, at some point we'll tell the whole story. I mean, there's a lot of parts of it you just don't want to say right now for a lot of different reasons. But I mean, there is, God was moving in the whole thing.
Right. I love it, and I love the idea. So Lisa and I speak at a lot of pro-life events and on behalf of a lot of pregnancy centers. And one of the things that I always tell every audience I speak to in this kind of area is that, you know, if we're really going to be upfront and really talk about abortion, how bad it is, we want to save babies, then you're going to have, since there's millions that have been aborted, you're going to have a lot of believers that are willing to do just what you and Jill did. I mean, in other words, somewhere on the bottom end of this whole situation, you got to have people willing to say, okay, we'll take a baby. And, you know, so I encourage people, look, if God's been putting that on your heart, follow through, because you're going to help save children on that part of it. So you can't have a pro-life movement without a pro-adoption movement as well. Oh, I mean, 100%. They have to go together. So in our family, obviously, has been a lot. Jace and Willie both have adopted ones that are already grown, but that works too, you know, because they needed that structure that and that ability. Basically, because Karina basically is an orphan, right?
She is, and I think some of that is God, who I say this in a lot of different areas of life. I mean, I believe he specializes in orchestrating meetings between people. I think, you know, he gets his message out about Jesus through us, despite our flaws. And I think when your eyes are open to that, you have these chance encounters in life that God set up.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just too many things. I've had way too many of those. One of them I was wrong about with, you know, Karina was that we get a call in the middle of the night, which is always, it gets my attention more like, kind of like Phil having that dream about the gold. You know, I'm like, wait a minute here. There could be something to this.
Chase is still thinking about that gold.
But they're like, you know, my wife, to her credit, she gets a call from our church in the middle of the night saying there's a girl, an orphan girl stranded in Costa Rica trying to get back to Nicaragua, but there's a civil war that has broken out. But she loves the Lord and has really educated herself. And so they're like, can you take her? If we get her in the U.S., can you help her?
Because she already she was going to college. She already had that lined up, but she couldn't.
Yeah,
she
but
couldn't
it just was, there was a time problem here. She had educated herself basically from the internet because one of the preachers at one of the churches, it kind of mentored her and it's been real tough on her in a good way. Like, you can do this. You know, the Lord will use you. So, you know, me, I was proud of my wife for saying yes, but in my mind, I'm thinking, I mean, look, we're not going to just help some freeloader. I mean, you always tend to think because you don't know. I met that girl about 5 minutes into that. I thought, this girl's an inspiration. You just can't fake.
She's one of the sweetest, most, you know, kind and gentle people I've ever met in my life.
I think that's true. A good point. I think a lot of times when you step into things like this that you hear other people's. I've heard other people's stories and I've not felt as virtuous as them. I've had like the same, like yours was free later. Mine was, I was thinking a couple of things I thought. One, when we got to the hospital and that we revived the baby, then I'm like, oh boy, what have I got into?
Well,
I mean, that's the first thing that popped in my head. But then I was like, you know what? I was like, God, if you call me, if this is what we're doing, then this is what we're doing. And another thing, insecurity I had on it is I didn't know, I wasn't really sure how I would respond to a child that wasn't biologically mine.
It's
never happened. Yeah. So I'm like, I mean, Jill's like, oh, it's no question. I'm all in. Like,
they're just better at it than we are.
They really are.
But look, you know what I've learned, Zach? And I mean, I take this advice for whatever it's worth. It hit me at some point during the last 4 years that I've had Karina. She's inspired me and helped me way more than I've. I've helped her. I'm like, she's a rock.
Yeah.
And you got to remember that it's God in us. And she found her relationship with God during her pain and misery and suffering and perseverance. And, you know, I think about that Romans 5 a lot.
Because
I see
that. Is she in contact with her real parents?
No,
they're gone.
They're gone.
They're dead.
She's an orphan. Yeah.
She was raised by a grandmother the last few years, and then she died. So she literally has nobody except
her
sister.
I think her mom you know, has died, but her dad is MIA.
Oh, right.
And, that's what it was. Yeah, then she lost her grandma, who basically had raised her. And so all she has is one sister. So, you know, you just, because in your mind, you're like, well, there's no family structure. Mm-hmm. So where are the problems that I know that call? I keep looking for, this can't be right. This can't be just God rescued this girl, and she's had some people who stepped up in the name of the Lord that's helped her along the way.
I thought the same thing about Phyllis. But when Phyllis, the more I've gotten to know her and the more we talk about her growing up the way she did, I realized that the favor of God, the hand of God, protected her. all of her childhood.
No doubt about it.
Not a lot of bad things didn't happen to her, that one day we would connect. And it was really interesting. So we've had that experience as a family in several different ways, but it was the same with her. I mean, it was just like, when we knew, we knew. I mean, Zach, you were the first one that reached out. It was like, Jack said, I think this is the real deal. And at this point, we haven't even told Dad and Mom about anything.
Yeah.
But, and I had the same experience. So it is right. I mean, you have to look for God opening those doors of opportunity, but you do have to be willing to walk through.
But he does provide you with all the things you're afraid of. Like, I was afraid of, I appreciate this. I'm infatuated with this baby. And I'm definitely as connected with Ruth as my daughter as I was with any of my other kids, which to me is like a supernatural spiritual thing that I can't quite explain.
Yeah.
But it is a picture of the gospel too. We call her the chosen one at the house.
I love
you're the chosen
one. But you think about, I mean, Father's Day, I think is next week. Yeah. Or by the time this releases, it'll probably be
a couple of days after.
But I mean, he does that to all mm-hmm. of us. He adopts us. I mean, he created us and then he adopts us. So he goes through that process, which I
love that that's mentioned, like in Ephesians and others, that phrase, mm-hmm. we're adopted in. Because the idea that our sin had separated us, but it's like, you're chosen. We want you to, you know, God says, I want you.
Yeah. Well, it really helps you in your relationship with God once you experience this, because you see it is different. It's hard to explain. And people who don't do it, they just, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
But all these things, even with Karina that I've seen, I have thought hundreds of times about, yeah, this is the way God views me. Which is awesome.
That's just nice every time our family gets together. Now it looks like a League of Nations, you know, because we've got all these people with different heritage and background and skin color. But I
thought about that.
We are a rainbow family.
I thought if we commit as a family to God and to get Jesus out to the world, why am I shocked that God assembled a team that basically is representative of the world? We are the United Nations, and we didn't really like have a strategic plan to do that.
Nope, it just made happened.
And to reiterate one point you made, that it's not just that we're ministering or anything like that. Like, there's a reception, a blessing that we're receiving. You mentioned it. I mean, I'm like, I'm the one getting the blessing here. Like, I can't imagine even, you know, we're in this 3 months now, 2 months. I'm like, I can imagine my life without Baby Ruth in it. But yeah, Baby Ruth, we got a picture of her with a candy bar.
Yeah, because the candy bar is about as long as she was.
Yeah, we sure got the Baby Ruth candy bar at the king size, and that's about how long she was.
Now that I'm 4 years this side of that, but if I'm ever in a situation where I need to get Jesus out in Spanish, I'm like, oh, I have just the weapon. Say hello to my friend Karina.
To my little friend.
All right, we're out of time. Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.